Yo, I fool.
Yo, what's up?
Yo, yo. Come here, come here. Yo, let's freak that rhyme we was freaking the other night.
Yo, I'm with it, yo. Just set it off.
I'm saying, though, after this, it's no turning back, dude.
Hey, yo, just set it off, man.
Pugilistic linguistics. Check out the mystics. We're fantastic.
You mean fantastic.
Fuck it. You'll get your ass kicked. Challenge my verbal gymnastics.
For acrobatic.
Vocabulary calisthenics. Can't understand the mathematics or esoteric. Watch the style, but also peep the lyrics. My lightning, my thunder. Way back, I stomped out Eric Belize. But now I stomp out MCs. Can't chill. Because the sun don't freeze. Heavy metal. Hard like titanium. Alchemist. I turn wax into platinum.
Influential, scientifical power. My mental violence will shower, devour at a crazy rate. I'm feeding through your circuits and I perforate in data bank. Stamina in the brain is how I play it. I enforce my force and I always must obey it. Endorsing essential ramen remedies against any man at arms that could get with you. Eternal, internal alchemist. Fulfill logic and science ever since. Throwing cerebral blows without my fist. Poisonous, tail whip. Don't mess with toys in this racket. Terrorists don't proceed to hijack it.
It's too perverted, you heard it. So now you get murdered. Test the sound system. It throws off your equilibrium. Deconcentration can fracture the meditation. Competition is flipped on at random. Deviant monks attack the mic. It's mental pandemonium. And then some, you go for your handgun. Psychokinetic forces proceed to smash in your cerebellum. Phonetician with more stamina than a Christian. My mind C3H5 and 309 like nitroglycerin. I bust as Apple Rock. Flush class with us and meet Cerebus. Cerebus.
Ready, ridiculous ravagery. As I come in, I whirlwind through cities, breaking down substances, combining matter. Test my hand skills and backbone splatter. Rough and tough, for those of mental will stomp ya. Pugilism, electrocute like Parker. Collaborate all my words into verses. I instill the will without even curses. Slurs, escapade off the beat. Totally complete with a unique physique. Microcosmic warrior, indeed I'll destroy ya. And it's Mike, I'm taking over.
Y'all don't be fooling around, I tell the truth. Nothing's secret, secret.
As devils search for the secrets to immortality, I alter my physical chemistry. Bop through the valley of the shadow of death. I exist even when no things are left. Vibrations transcend space and time. Pure at heart because I deal with the mind. That's why I compose these verses. Lord of all worlds, my thoughts are now universes. Written on these pages is the ageless wisdom of the sages. Ignorance is contagious. So I hope you keep your focus. There's no hocus pocus. In the end, it's just us. Devil got brother killing brother. It's insane. Going out like Abel and Cain. Widen up and use your brain. There'll be no limit to the things that you can gain. In positivity, balance it with negativity. Until then, ain't the devil happy. Like John Gotti, he came from the caves to destroy everybody. And we like fools destroy our own bodies. Too many niggas chilling, bad boys boom boom. This leaves no room for the flowers to bloom. Seeds blow in the wind, another drug killing. What are we accomplishing? Nothing. What's the matter? Why every time I look around another brain gets splattered? Some pockets get fatter, but it don't matter. The devil's the only one who really gets fatter. Lead ruptures flesh, spleens are shattered, dreams are shattered. Another queen without a king. What will our children become without proper guidance? Probably nothing. So ain't the devil happy? Us. state of nothingness, hopelessness, lifelessness. If you're in range, I hope you hear this and try to change this, cause it's disastrous. Who gets the most loot? Who gets bust? Dollar bill, y'all, is the God we trust. The days blow by like dust, even men of steel rust. We're out here acting ridiculous when only we can save us. Mentally enslave us for little or nothing. Kill our neighbors. Animalistic, cannibalistic behavior. Look to the sky for your savior. He won't save you. He didn't save your forefathers. Why bother, brother? You must discover the power of self. Know thyself or find thyself. Hate in thyself. Kill in thyself. While he collects the wealth that you sit back and murder for, ain't the devil happy?
My brain came from the depth of space with the power of the Sphinx, stepping through the stargate. My brain came from the depth of time and space with the power of the Sphinx, stepping through the stargate. All I view is nothing new, just deja vu. A clue of my afterlife, a previous one before this one too. The shell of my essence, shed skin, stepping into my photonic origin. Genesis without the gin. Garden of Eden collapsed like nemesis, saving humans in a time lapse. Feel my solar energies and give room to me. I got nine celestial spheres in tune with me. From the underworld to this world, I use my principle. It's the infinity that's invincible. The unmoved mover, primordial heal. Still communicating with me at will. Through the arc amulet, photons they project. Like a fifth dimensional holograph that steps. Brainwaves telepathically reach the deep, giving me revelation in REM sleep. My brain came from the depths of time and space with the power of the Sphinx, stepping through the stargate. My brain came from the depths of time and space with the power of the Sphinx, stepping through the stargate. Offshoot from my comedic predecessors inside a nation of millions like Abraham's children in the wilderness, willing to do what I must to survive. And all this job, animated dead, that's alive. Around my parameters, from La Brea to finesse. Ignorance is what kills you, what a nigga will do. Me and my folks, toast. Busy smoke, various hydroponics that makes one joke. But no lead to smoke with the blunt and the lighter. You can come in bill, but you gotta respect the cipher. We're doing too much, observation is the policy. Fools yap too much and get trapped in idiocy. Hush up that crap, put that BS on the shelf. No outside interference, just building on the self. Brain rolls off the depths of time and space with antiquity as a sphinx. Stepping through the stargate. My brain came from the depths of time and space with the power of the Sphinx. Stepping through the stargate. My brain came from the depths of time and space with the power of the Sphinx. Stepping through the stargate. Clear night skies, hope it's like this tomorrow. On the California border, looking at the constellation from Barstow. Area 51, not far from here, I feel nervousness as I create magnetic disturbances. But I get contact from way out there, out of the nowhere, a Pluto's orbit. Prepare for invasions of the energies in the last hour. Clash of the titans over universal power. Dark signs, exercise and mystify. Magical methods of power to deify. A man over the evil of degeneration and aging. My vision's not blurry, even as a centurion. Walking the earth 22nd century AD, mystic. Phenomenal simplicity. Live by laws of nature, tied as a black fist. That which exists will always exist. My brain came from the depths of time and space with the power of the Sphinx, stepping through the stargate. My brain came from the depths of time and space with the power of the Sphinx, stepping through the stargate. My brain came from the depths of time and space with the power of the Sphinx, stepping through the stargate. My brain came from the depths of time and space with the power of the Sphinx, stepping through the stargate. My brain came from the depths of time and space with the power of the Sphinx. My brain came from the depths of time and space with the power of the Sphinx. Power of the Sphinx. Higher nature over lower nature. Self-mastery, Black Dot Universal. Thank you.
right, all right. Thank you all for coming to the Alim Bey Show, in which they're going to be dealing with spirituality versus religion. And we have the special guest, Professor Walter Williams. We're waiting for him to come on. And so in that time period, what we're going to do is talk about some things right quick. Judaism, Christianity, Islam, which are the topics in which that he definitely deals with. And we've gone over this topic before, the origin and how it links back to ancient Egypt, the information in which that is provided for it, and the connections. Of course, building on 325 AD, Constantine, Council of Nicaea, as well as many other councils. So what we're going to do is I'm gonna play some more music, and we're going to, after the next song, can hopefully we have a more. All right.
At the center of the center of the center of the world, the inner chamber of the Pyramid of Cheops in Giza, Egypt, I follow the track of the scarab. The scarab, the ancient Egyptian symbol of longevity.
Capital I. Capital I. In a consistent pattern of how my mind corrects and directs me functioning in a haze of complexity, I am mastering my time for this cause to show you true works of a rebel without a pause. Be of a good courage and be not afraid. No sway to the left or the right and be not dismayed. In the midst of the storm, be the cornerstone and observe the landslides and falling of the hailstones. In the terror dome, alone with robotic clones, but you destined to see the light of the heavenly throne. The stars luminous, so I don't hide at night. I ascend from the abyss, shining a guiding light. Constellations of the sun, I and I, billions of others, one for many, reflect the nature of each other. Capital I,
symbol of longevity.
Capital I,
symbol of longevity.
I don't hide at night. I ascend from the abyss, shining a guiding light. Capital I,
symbol of longevity.
Magically regenerated, magic, mysterious signs, unexplained, incomprehensible to the average brain. Exercise on the plane of the most highest, quiet the physical body, emotional silence. Listen to the thought, the intuition warns, assembles in the electricity, soon to take form. Ideas are shaped in the earth from desire, studying the seven in the house of fire. How do the numbers relate to me? The letter and my respect for fire, earth, air, water, and effort. Documents of a mentor, ancestors give us a plan. Knowledge in the mind and the body of a man. Rise like the morning sun, expressions of the universe, but the universe is one. Capital I,
symbol of longevity.
Capital I,
symbol of longevity.
I don't hide at night. I ascend from the abyss, shining the guiding light. Capital I,
symbol of longevity.
Capital I. Consciousness, cultivation, it's all in the mind. Energy traveling on the serpentine line. Dimming the irrational, material lust. Finding the Uraeus, you rock us. As we strut like the Egyptian architects. In the inner reach of the Nile Valley, African intellect. Selfless, oneness with humanity. Here begins your true sense of responsibility. Respond to your ability for soul travel. Up the spine from the bile to the pineal. Jacob fought the angel and threw his thigh to joint. He fought himself to reach his spiritual conscious point. All things come from the eternal, and all things will return. Allow your soul to learn. Capital I,
symbol of longevity.
Capital I,
symbol of longevity.
I don't hide at night. I ascend from the abyss, shining the guiding light. Capital I. silent meditation. In corners of darkness, I sit in smoke inhalation, consumed by blackness, in silent meditation. In corners of darkness, I sit in smoke inhalation, consumed by blackness. Silent meditation. My legs folded, eyes closed. I see visions from the celestial Nile, infinite dimensions of me seeing the universe as an order in a faraway place. Light years of traveling, outer and inner space. Locus coeruleus and messages and give you a mental picture. Modern day manifestation of description. As we transcend, but a visitor trapped in the physical. But I'm a psyche pondering, directing my vehicle. Motility, metaphysical reality. Bodily function through illusions, images, and truth. The senses, so I continue to be self. All I see in like the horse, hawk, bird. Flesh, embodiment of the word. Capital I. Capital
symbol
I. I don't hide at night. I ascend from the abyss, shining a guiding light. Capital I. Capital I. I don't hide at night. I ascend from the abyss, shining a guiding light. Capital I. Capital I.
Symbol of longevity.
Man-made, they are man-introduced. Like no human on earth was born
coming out of their mother's womb smoking cigarettes or using alcohol or using drugs. No human on earth coming out of their mother's womb had any type of religion attached to their humanity. This is your human essence as a human being, your spirituality that's indwelling inside of you. And it's the matter of you being introduced to that at an early age so you can be able to use your own personal humanity for your own self, because you have 7 billion human beings walking this earth of all races, creeds, and color. And every one of these human beings walking this earth, of the 7 billion, are all connected by way of one thing, and that's air. Air connects us with our own humanity and our own spirituality. And your pineal gland, every human has a pineal gland. And your pineal gland is a sensor organ that sits in the middle of your brain. It serves as a receiver and a sender between you, the human being, and your personal universe. Your personal universe is your mind. And the bottom of your pineal gland are your nostrils. What do? With your nostrils? You intake air that causes your indwelling spirit to become alive and to be conscious of what's around you and what's make you conscious of everything that is before you and around you. So that is what you have as a human being. Your mind is your universe. So you should be able to know how to use your mind. And so you know how to conduct yourself and your life moving forward. This, if you know that and be aware of who you are as a human being, you will never, ever embrace a religion as long as you live, because you know who you are as a human being. That, in essence, is your spirituality.
Okay, now where do you find that with religion? What is the difficulties and the problems with the word religion, or, you know, and with the principles or the creeds of religion? What are the problems with that?
The problem with that is that you were not born with a religion. You don't need it. It's man-made. It's man-introduced for the sole purpose of controlling you as a human being. And all religions are based off of mythology. And all religions are kept together by one's belief in that particular religion, no matter what name religion that you may call it. Without your belief and your spiritual power, the same spiritual power that you were given at the time of your birth, you use that power to give it to a religion, such as a Christian going into a church. That Christian going into the church don't have to think. All they have to do is believe and have faith. And what you're being enticed to believe in is this dead white man on a cross. You believe in that. So therefore, once you believe in that, you give all your power away that was given to you at the time of your birth. The Bible or any religious book or religious literature that you are encouraged to believe in, a Bible is a book that one has to believe in. It has no power whatsoever until you begin to believe. Use your own personal power to believe in those narrative stories of those characters that never walked the earth as human beings in and throughout this Bible. So therefore, it is very detrimental to you as a human being and to all of mankind. So one does not need a religion, because if you embrace a religion, then you're telling me that you know nothing about your own personal humanity. You know nothing about it. So then you sit up there and you give away all of your power and you become powerless. We as a people, an African people, we are powerless because we sit up in these churches and give all our power away. You go to the mosque and you Islam alaikum and alaikum salam, and you give all your power away. You're saying that you're a black Hebrew Israelite. You're talking about a character in the Bible. You may as well say, I'm from the blood of Pinocchio, or from Donald Duck, or, you know, one of those comic book characters, Popeye or somebody. So therefore, you don't need this in your life. You need to know the truth. Today we are looking and seeking the truth. And
right.
The truth is not in no religion whatsoever.
Right. Now we know
in religious literature.
Right. Now we know in your historical origin of Christianity, you stated on the cover that Jesus, there's never been a man to ever have walked or existed by the name of Jesus, as well as you also said on your historical origin of Islam about Muhammad, as well as other mythical or fictional characters, because these are allegories. Why do you state this as such? You know, let's break that down to the audience. Are they actually characters or composites from mythologies taken from ancient Egypt? And who was it in which they took these character deposits, you know, composites, and made them into anthropomorphized characters?
Well, they first place you got to realize that what you're dealing with are mythical characters. That's the first thing. And when you realize that, then you need to begin to run away from that, that you don't need this in your life. Now, in my book, The Historical Origin of Christianity, I break it down how the origin of Christianity came about with the progression of, and using the progression of history or the discipline of history. So therefore, I walk you through that discipline and that progression in history. And it happened to start in Egypt, and all your ecumenical councils were in Turkey, Northeast Africa, you see. So therefore, I walk you through that so you can get an understanding of what you're dealing with and what the world has put upon us and what you're given when you go to a church or a mosque. You're given some type of religious literature by way of a book, or the Holy Bible for the Christians and the Quran for the Muslims, and et cetera, et cetera. So, one, you have to really understand who you are first. Then all the things I'm talking and saying today at this very moment will fall in place where you can have a good understanding of exactly what has happened to us as a people and what is still happening to us as a people. And we're being encouraged by these misguided ministers to participate and partake and embracing this image on the cross that don't even look like us, you see. And in Egypt, I was, in my book, The Historical Origin of Christianity, I show you where this image that we know today as Jesus Christ, who this image actually is, which you have to read now. And once you read my book, I want you to, on the back of the cover, it says, read this book more than once until you can internalize the message. You have to read it more than once. You can't read it one time. You have to read it one time, then go back and study it and internalize and take notes and et cetera, till you really understand what I'm saying in this book. And the same thing with my Islam book. And I'm coming out with my third book within 60 days from now.
And what's the name of your third book?
Dispelling Myths of Ancient Egypt. I'm exposing Abraham, Moses, the Bible, Jesus the Christ, the chronologies of ancient Egypt. I have a warning in this book, warning to all African scholars, do not use the chronology of ancient Egypt, because the chronology of ancient Egypt was created by Europeans, Western academia, using the Bible to do so. Our ancient Egyptian ancestors never wrote a history of themselves. They left us and the moral legacy in stone, monuments, the pyramids, the Sphinx. The body of the Sphinx is one city block long, six stories tall, and other monuments and art and papyrus and literature and stuff like that. That's what they left us. They didn't create no chronology, the first dynasty, the second dynasty, and the third, and so forth and so on. They didn't do that. So in this book, I'm dispelling all that. Herodotus, why the Meta-Natural Hieroglyphics has never been deciphered, Josephus and Socrates, Plato, Aristotle, Diodorus Siculus, and it goes on and on and on. So, and also the Hyksos. I have a chapter in there repudiating the Hyksos. And also I have another chapter in there repudiating the biblical Persians and so forth and so on. So it's going to be a very good book. And my wife and I, we're collaborating on writing this book. And she's writing her part is Reclaiming Ancient Egypt, you see. So we're going to have a very good book. We're going to have, you know, pictures depicting ancient Egyptians And so our ancestors can be acknowledged by their descendants, us as a people. So when you look into the faces of these pictures being depicted in my book, you can see your own self. In other words, it's like looking in a mirror. When you look in a mirror, an African born in America looking in a mirror, that the image in that mirror is looking back at him, but that image in that mirror is that's looking back at him is dressed in ancient Egyptian garb. So he can see that when he looks in the mirror, he's and the image that looking back at him is telling him that you are an ancient Egyptian.
All right. I've been waiting for the historical origin of Judaism, and that there's never been a character by the name of Moses that ever walked the planet Earth either.
That's correct. That's correct. Well, in this book, I'm mentioning that it's never been. I'm dispelling that. But anyway, I'm working on. I have written my part of
right.
the book, and my wife is finishing up her part and doing some other things in the book. And I'm writing at this very moment the historical origin of Judaism. I began that journey and process of producing that book called The Historical Origin of Judaism.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. All right. Now, when we talk about fictional characters, do you think they have any, I guess, connection, or do they relate to, like, concepts talking about to the physical body? Because I know, like, in my research, with Jesus Christ, we know that his Aramaic name is Yehoshua or Yahshua.
See, you know, Brother Bay,
mm-hmm.
there's never been a man that ever walked the earth in human form of any race, creed, or color by the name of Jesus Christ, so you can't say that.
No, but this is what I'm tying and connecting to. Is because even though it's never been that, there's still the story. And we know that the Pisos or the Pisos family, who was related to, Herod, as well as also to the Ptolemies or the Ptolemy family, he had access.
No, Brother Bay, hold it. Piso.
Right.
Supposed to be the father of Jesus. Now, this is how. If you study Piso literature, the saga of Piso.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm saying to you, don't bring that into our community now. We don't need that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have to discard all of that.
Okay.
We don't need any of this anymore.
Okay.
We have to outgrow this.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you see, because the whole world is passing us by as a people. The whole world is changing all around us, and we're sitting up in these churches and believing in a dead white man on the cross that don't even look like us, and then we got scholars out here trying to rationalize and make sense of this confusion.
Mm-hmm.
You see, the Bible and all religious literature was written in an abstruse a form. The word abstruse
mm-hmm.
means they're writings that are with the intentional and the intent of confusing. We don't need that anymore. We have to scale all back down and discard all of that and go right and find our way back to ancient Egypt. Our greatness is lying in the continent of Africa. Our ancestors didn't use all this kind of hidden so-called metaphysical religions and so forth and so on.
Mm-hmm.
We don't need that. We don't need that. So
how do you explain? You said that the hieroglyphics or the Metunata was never decoded. Explain that for the people.
Very simple.
Mm-hmm.
You have pictorial symbols that are drawn in art,
mm-hmm.
and they are ascribed to be this art and pictorial symbols coming from the culture and the civilization of the ancient Egyptians.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying to you that those symbols has never been deciphered, because what's being what those symbols are being applied to, what's being applied to those symbols are an alphabet that the Europeans have created, sort of a consensus among them in their academia, to assign an alphabet to the symbols that we know that came out of our ancestors' culture and civilization, and they're called hieroglyphics. Now, in order for you to understand hieroglyphics, now, you have to understand this, what I'm saying, that you cannot assign an alphabet to a symbol. That's number one.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, symbols can only be explained if you know the meaning of the symbol. If you don't know the meaning of the symbol, just like when you went to take your driver's test, they tested you in three things, rules of the road, eyesight, and symbols. When you got to the symbols, they didn't ask you to put no alphabet to the symbol. They asked you to explain it. If you didn't explain the meaning of the symbol that they put before you for your test, then you failed the test. You see? So it's like the symbol of a question mark. Now, everybody, when they see that symbol, you can explain that symbol. You can say, oh, that's the symbol of the question mark. That means for you to ask questions. You see? Now, but you cannot put an alphabet to that symbol. You can't say that the question mark symbol represents an R, or M, or T, or P, or anything like that. You can't do that. And another thing, in order for those symbols that we know today as the hieroglyphics, those pictorial symbols, that art coming out of the culture of the ancient Egyptian, you would have to ask the ancient Egyptian who drew those symbols what he or she meant for them to be. And they're not around for you to ask that. You see? So they have never, those symbols has never been deciphered. You see? And there's a dictionary. If you can get a dictionary, the American Dictionary of the English Language, and you look up hieroglyphics, and they'll tell you in the definition of the hieroglyphic in the dictionary, unlegible, undecipherable. They tell you they can't be deciphered, you see? And I've come along, and I've been telling you that for years, you see? So I had to put it in the book as I go around the country and lecture people, bring up the hieroglyphics. So I had eventually put, have you read my Historical Origin of Christianity book?
Oh, yes, several times.
Okay, if you go to page 146 or 147, you'll see why the Melanesian hieroglyphs has never been decided. And I got it in there for anybody to see that. And then if you go and get a book called The Rosetta Stone by Carol Andrews, she wrote this book for the British Museum. She also says on page 54 that the hieroglyphs has never been deciphered. So,
well, I had to ask you that question because, you know, we was taught in junior high and high school that Champollion, was able to decipher the characters. So that's the reason why I asked that. And, of course,
okay.
I mean, that's why I had to ask you to get your opinion on it. And,
okay.
Yeah, I'm glad that you answered that question.
Well, let me tell you about, before we go on, I just want to mention this about Champollion. In 1822, he came out, supposedly have deciphered seven glyphs or whatever the case might be. But Western academia, his own peers, said no, he didn't. They didn't accept that. Until 44 years later, they found a supposed bilingual stone called the Stone of Canopus in Canopus, Egypt. And then they said, Western academia said, then Champollion did decipher. But I can't find any trace of this Stone of Canopus. They don't show it. They don't even talk about it.
You're right.
So that's another proof of what's happened. But then 44 years after Champollion came along, they say, he did decipher the hieroglyphics by supposedly discovering this stone. But the people that protested or refused to accept Champollion's so-called decipherment, they were dead.
Right.
You see? But still in all, you cannot put an alphabet to a symbol. I asked the people, okay, where are you getting the decipherment of the hieroglyphics, or where are you using the term Kemet from? They said that they're getting it from the hieroglyphics. You can't do that. See, they're saying that the K, the alphabet K, comes from the picture of a basket drawn. A drawn basket, that's K. And then they said that the owl, O-W-L, bird, means M. And they said that a loaf of bread, picture of a bread, means T. So they come out with K-M-T, means Kemet, and so forth and so on. So it goes off into a direction that You need to investigate and really think about it like I did and come up with something that disproved that. But you see, Western academia, in order for them to bring in to their institutions our ancestors' culture and civilization of the ancient Egyptians into their institution, in order for them to be called and identified as Egyptologists, they had to take those symbols, and because they knew nothing about them, they don't understand, still don't, and the world don't really know what they are, but they're there. And but in order for them to call themselves Egyptologists, they took that into their institutions and said, "Oh, we have deciphered the hieroglyphics based off of Champollion's so-called decipherment."
Right.
So that, yeah, you get all that. So anyway, well, so what was you about to say? I'm sorry.
No, I was just getting ready to say I didn't want to cut you off, but I definitely wanted to get that question in because people have, you know, asked that question. You know.
Mm-hmm.
Champollion, but I know that there's even another more pertinent one because I know, according to my research and study, that supposedly that the Dogons of Mali, they left ancient Egypt. They was there also, but they left around 8,000 years ago or, you know, 6,000 B.C. and, you know, a B.C.E. or whatever we want to refer to it as, but based on their, you know, calculation. But it is said that the Dogons still speak, you know, Metunetcher today.
Well, yeah.
As well as also that allegedly the Hebrew glyphs are actually part of that ancient Metunetcher language.
See, Brother Bay, first place.
I have to ask the question, Brother Walter.
I understand. Let me answer that. First place, there's no Hebrew nothing.
Right.
Strictly, in order to have a Hebrew, you got to have an Abraham.
Mm-hmm.
S. David Sperling, in his book entitled "Original Torah," that came out in 2000, S. David Sperling is a rabbi who teaches at the Hebrew Union College in New York. Wrote a book called "Original Torah."
Right.
And he said that there's never been an Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Moses, Sarah, Gideon, Esau, David, Solomon, and don't stop there. And I said, don't stop there, simply because every biblical character never walked the earth as a human being. Now, he is saying that in his book, there's no Abraham. See, and so in order to have a Hebrew, you have to have Abraham.
Right. Well,
without Abraham, you don't have a Hebrew.
There was no Abraham. When you say that, it was an allegory in Galatians, the 4th chapter. So the 24th verse, you're absolutely correct.
Okay. So you don't have, you know. So therefore, there's no such thing as a Hebrew.
Right.
See, that's number one. Now, another part of that, you had a twofold thing. Oh, about the Dogons. You said that the Dogons speak the same language that the ancient Egyptians spoke during the time of antiquity.
That is what has been stated, Brother Walter.
Okay.
I'm just repeating what's been stated because this is a lot of writings in which has been put out. So I want to ask you because to me you're an authority on it. So you know I want to get your opinion on these types of things.
Okay, first place, you cannot say that the Dogons speak the same language as the ancient Egyptians. I'm going to tell you why. No one has ever heard now they spoke many dialects over Egypt, and there were many dialects spoken throughout the Nile Valley civilization, which Ethiopia is part of that civilization, and Nubia / the Sudan is part of that Nile Valley civilization. So there were many, many dialects spoken around. Now, the last of the five ancient Egyptian dialects that went out of use was in the 12th and the 13th century. We're talking about the Shahidic, Baharic, Fayyamic, Akmemic, and Sub-Akmemic. Those five dialects spoken in Egypt, those are the last of the five ancient Egyptian dialects, and those coming from local areas in Egypt, in those spots. The dialects are named after the dwelling or the living dwelling of the ancient Egyptians, you see, in Egypt. So what I'm saying is that no one has ever heard, you can't say that the Dogons, I'm not trying to take anything away from the Dogons, Okay? But the thing about it is, let's use our analytical mind. No one has ever heard the sound of the language, the spoken language that our ancestors, the ancient Egyptians, spoke during the time of antiquity, and they had many dialects all over the Nile Valley civilization.
Interesting. There was another question in which that in the chat room they wanted me to ask you about. They wanted you to speak on Erasmus.
Who?
On Erasmus.
You have to clear that name up for me.
Right. It's spelled Erasmus.
Erasmus. Desiderius Erasmus.
Right.
Yeah, Desiderius Erasmus in 1516 came out with the Novum Instrumentum. Okay? Let me go back and set you up a scenario of how Erasmus came about. Okay? Now, I have to set you up. Maybe I shouldn't do that because it's a whole lot of information that I have to even disseminate before I can get to Erasmus. Okay? Because it has something to do with the printing of the first Bible ever printed on earth. Okay, and it has something to do with the seat of Christianity being moved out of Northeast Africa, out of Constantinople, out of the Church of the Hagia Sophia, by John the Eighth, going into Florence, Italy, and relinquishing the seat of Christianity from Africa, from Northeast Africa, out of the Church of the Hagia Sophia in Constantinople to be that seat to be transferred into Europe. Okay, and when he did that, that was in 1439. 6 years later, over the catacombs on the outskirts of Rome, they began to dig up all those bodies because the catacombs were the burial ground on the outskirts of Rome, and it's called the catacombs because they buried their dead in the ground. So Eugenius IV and Nicholas V went and began to prepare for the coming and the building of the Vatican. And in 1445, they began to build St. Peter's Church, today known as St. Peter's Basilica. So today, at this very moment that I'm speaking to you, Christians all over the world are getting and practicing what is known, and I call it Western Christianity, because the historical origin of Christianity, the world is not getting to know that, only if they read my book, The Historical Origin of Christianity. But when this Vatican was being prepared, because they made a replica of the Vatican today. If you go into the Vatican today, the Vatican is nothing but a replica of the double-walled city of Constantinople in Northeast Africa, where the first seat of Christianity was transferred out of into on the outskirts of Rome into Europe. Now, in 1437, I got to tell you all this to answer your question about Erasmus. In 1437, Johannes Gutenberg created a printing press with movable print. The problem with that was that he had a machine that could print up thousands of books, thousands of pieces of literature. But the problem was that the people living in the secular community in Europe could not read or write. So he had a machine with movable print, a printing press. Even though the Chinese had a printing press in the 12th and 13th century with movable print, now you have a printing press in Europe with movable print, and the person that was given the credit for inventing that machine was Johannes Gutenberg, 1437. He didn't have enough money to sustain himself, so he borrowed from a capitalist by the name of Johannes Fust, F-U-S-T, who loaned him money on with a high interest rate, a usury tax, and he couldn't pay that loan back, so his printing press was confiscated. Now, in 1475, the world's first printed Bible first appeared on planet Earth, 1475. That meant in 1475, that was 30 years after the creation of the Vatican and the St. Peter's Church that is over there under the name of St. Peter's Basilica was being built. 40 years after Christianity or the seat of Christianity has been transferred from Northeast Africa, Constantinople, into Europe. Now, the problem came about when this Bible came out. It was called the Hebrew Bible. The Roman Catholic Church had no literature for their hero or for their object. Their object or hero was Jesus the Christ. They didn't have none. Now, who formulated this Bible, who created this Bible, was Johannes Ruslan and two of his Italian peers, Marcello Facchino, Pitico della Mirandola. They collaborated on creating this Bible, okay? And that Bible was created for the capital, the capitalist, Johannes Fuss, and the capitalist community, because they knew that this religion called Christianity was the only religion in Europe, and they, if the Roman Catholic Church was going to be the only entity for this religion, they had to do something in order to, let's say, make money from this particular religion, which they did, by way of in 1417, getting a man by the name of Martin Luther to come about and nail 95 theses on the church door in Wittenberg, Germany. Right. 95 theses for the Roman Catholic Church to reform. And this is called the Protestant movement. In other words, they began to break up that one entity of Christianity, which is the Roman Catholic Church. Now, in the Protestant movement, anybody can get a church or whatever the case might be, and it's called a Protestant church like they have today. Now, getting back to this Bible, Johannes Ruslan told the Pope of the Roman Catholic Church, said, now, if you read this Bible will help all Christians to understand Christianity better, and that infuriated him. Now, Pope Alexander VI in 1500 commissioned a ex-Roman Catholic priest and a playwright by the name of Desiderius Erasmus. This is in 1500, to write something on the object of Christianity, and something on the object of Christianity is Jesus the Christ. So what he did, it took him 16 years to come out in 1516 with the Novum Instrumentum, you see? And which is called a Synoptic Gospel. The Synoptic Gospel consists of Mark, Matthew, and Luke, and they always tell you that John came later, which John did come later in the King James Version. So this is Erasmus. In 1516, he came out with the Novum Instrumentum. 1519, they changed it to the Novum Testamentum. 1535, they came out and said it was the New Testament. Then he added six other manuscripts and books to this New Testament, which he came out with 1 and 2 Peter, 1 and 2 Corinthians, Galatians, and Epistles to the Romans. You see? So those were his nine manuscripts. So that is just a little overview on Desiderius Erasmus. He was the one that caused and brought about the Synoptic Gospel, Mark, Matthew, and Luke, and Q literature, QLE literature, which is the same thing, and creating the New Testament for the very first time. Now, before 1516, when he came out with that Bible, Pope Alexander X try to stop the distribution of the Hebrew Bible by a if an individual get and go to their dictionaries or get online and pull up the Pfefferkorn Ruchlin controversy, P-F-E-F-F-E-R-K-O-R-N, Ruchlin, R-E-U-C-H-L-I-N, controversy of 1510, where Pope Alexander X called for the destruction, the burning, and confiscation of all Hebrew literature, if you want it. But 10 years after he called for that confiscation, burning, and destruction of all Hebrew literature, 6 years later, here comes Desiderius Erasmus coming out with the Novum Instrumentum, today known as the New Testament, and he called that destruction and that controversy, he called it off. So, because the Roman Catholic Church had literature for their object of Jesus Christ by way of Desiderius Erasmus. That's it.
All right, all right. You're blowing it away, Brother Walters, I'm telling you. Let me go to the lines here, and let's see. You have some questions.
Mm-hmm.
Area code 614, you're on the line.
Peace, Dr. Arlene. This is Brother Insight, a.k.a. Brother D. Morgan.
Peace, Brother D. How you doing today?
I'm good, I'm good. Dr. Williams, how you doing, sir?
Fine. This is Brother D. out of Columbus.
Yes, you know it is. You know I had to call it and represent for the master teacher, Dr. Walter Williams himself, live and in color. We're glad to have you on, man.
Okay, thank you.
Great job as usual. But I just want to get my question in to get out the way for anybody else that has a question. You know, we've sat at your feet so many times in the past and listened to you speak and give us this very valuable information. Can you let the listeners know why it's important for us not only to get this information but to give it to our children? Because I'm 35 years old, and I'm just not coming into this information in the last 7, 8, maybe 9 years. And I feel like had I known this information as a younger man, I wouldn't have been behind the eight ball. You know what I mean? So why is it important in your eyes for us to give this to the children right away instead of giving them, you know, Christ, you know, and any other other Western major religions?
Well, it's very important, Brother D, for you to pass this on to your children. First thing you have to do is pass on the understanding and teach your children who they are as human beings, like I mentioned when I first came on this program.
Mm-hmm.
They have to know who they are as a human being first. They have to know about what their human essence can do for them as a human being and their family and community. They have to know that. They have to know about the pineal gland. They have to know about their mind, their own personal universe. They got to know about their subconscious mind, how to use it, how to interact with your conscious mind, you see, and things like that. And they have to know, you have to teach them the laws of the universe, reciprocity, what goes around come around. You reap what you sow, et cetera, et cetera. Okay? How to use your mind to think, how to bring things into your life by your thoughts. You have to teach them that everything around them that they can physically see was once invisible, including them.
Mm.
Like I'm in my bedroom now. I can see lamps and I can see bed. I can see my dresser and my nightstands and so forth and so on. Now, all what I'm seeing now was once invisible at a time. Everything that I'm seeing came out of some human's mind, whether it's male or female, in its physical form. So you have to teach them that from the invisible comes the physical by way of that individual thought. You see, so you got 7 billion people walking this earth with the same capacity and that you have as a human being. They are able to think. So as you walk throughout the world, everything that you see came from someone's mind, from an invisible form in a physical, to the physical form. So these are some of the things that you have to teach your children. You teach them to stay away from all religions. Because
right.
religions, all religions are man-made. They are made to control man. So you have to teach your child to stay away from that. You see? So therefore, and then you, then we as a people, we have to teach our children to find, and you have to teach them to help find their way back to ancient Egypt. Once
right.
you find your way back to ancient Egypt, guess what happens to white supremacy? It's gone. It's over with. When you said that I am an ancient Egyptian descendant of the ancient Egyptian world's first and oldest civilized people and the greatest people that's ever walked this earth, that civilized all of humanity, everything that you see around you that is being used as part of civilization came out of that one culture from those one Africans, our ancestors, the ancient Egyptians. And once you do that, then white supremacy is over with, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So in a short form, I mean, I could go on and on and on, but those are my two answers to you. No, teach your child who they are as a human being and make sure you teach them back to ancient Egypt, because our greatness is lying in the continent of Africa. No one is claiming it. I'm walking around with a shirt on every day. I love my African ancestors, ancient Egyptians, trying to get attention to our people, but they're going off into the Bible. They're going off into the Hebrew, and they're going off into this, and they're going off into that, and they're going off into this, and Islam alaikum, and oh, it's all this confusion out here. And here we are, the greatest people walking the earth, because our ancestors left us in the immortal legacy, and we don't even recognize it. We're going off into too many directions. So that would be my answer to you.
Thanks,
Brother
Dr.
D, you feel good about that?
Oh, I feel real good, Doc. And just to say this before I can get out the way, man, peace to his wife, his queen. I always give honor and respect to Sister Arnetta, because you think Doc is heavy, Sister Arnetta is just as heavy, man. And I've learned so much from both of them, and I'm grateful for the relationship that I forged with them, and I consider the honor and the pleasure to sit at both of you all's feet. So you guys enjoy the rest of your evening, man, and continue to drop this real information on the show tonight. And peace to you, Dr. Aleem, and your wife as well, brother.
Okay, thanks a lot, Brother D.
All right, thank you, guys.
All right, we got another question here. It's 973, area code 973. You're on the line.
Yes, peace to the listening audience and the doctor and the host. My name is Rasul. I'm calling from New Jersey. And when I came in, he was talking about that Moses and certain ones didn't exist physically, Jesus. And I'd like to know from him where I'm hitting and missing at, because my perception has always been, when you talk about prophets and messengers from Adam to Jesus to Muhammad, that they're actually principles that reside in you, not so much physical, and that Adam and Eve represented a type, an environment, a community, not an individual female and male. When they talk about Jesus being born from the womb of a woman named Mary, Mary was a community, an environment that the word, righteous word came from, not a physical Mary. So,
do you have a question?
My question is, am I kind of in the right area?
No, you're in the wrong area. You're in the wrong area. See, you're talking about metaphysics. And metaphysics cannot be used simply because you cannot get a factual answer. You cannot get an answer by way of using metaphysics. Metaphysics will take you round and round and round, but never give you an ending. So what you're doing is that you're putting a lot of things in your mind that you don't need in there, because you're dealing with mythology. So why should you entertain your life? And you're you're a young man, and you're a smart young man, so why entertain your mind with foolishness and mythology? You don't need that in your life anymore. Okay?
Okay. Thank you. So I'm just saying, so they didn't exist. I'm with that, right?
Yeah, none of those names that you mentioned never walked the earth as human beings.
Right.
Now,
okay. Go ahead,
okay?
Brother. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you.
All right.
Now, what he can do, Brother Bay,
Yes.
Is that the last call? What he can do from New Jersey, he can buy my book if he want to.
Mm-hmm.
Both books, The Historical Origin of Christianity, where I'm saying that there's never been a man that ever walked the earth in human form of any race, people of color by the name of Jesus Christ, never existed. I walk you through the progression of history. I use the discipline of history to write that book. That one biblical reference is in that book, none whatsoever. And then you can get my next book, The Historical Origin of Islam. And also that will explain and clear up a lot of things that he has floating around in his mind, okay? And that will be a good two books for him to find his way back to the truth based on facts.
Got you. Mm-hmm. All right, we have another question here. We have caller, area code 215. Area code 215, you're on the line. Peace.
Peace. How you doing?
Doing well. How are you today?
Questions for you.
Yeah.
I've been wanting to talk to the brother for so long. I've read both the books.
Oh, okay.
They gave me a lot of good information, especially when I'm studying at that point in my life. And,
where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Philadelphia.
Okay.
Hold on real quick. Let me grab my charger. My first question is, as far as the, I studied with the Hebrew Israelites
for okay.
a few years, and then I came across your book, and it just changed my whole perspective on things. As far, now, let me ask you a question. As far as, like, the Falashian Jews that live over in Ethiopia, I believe that's how you pronounce it, how did they become Israelites if the whole story is an allegorical story? Did they just embrace something, or how'd that work out?
Okay, stop. We're dealing with the philosopher Jews of Ethiopia. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You want to know how they became Jews? Is that
mm-hmm.
right? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. You go. You have to go back to the Church of England.
Mm-hmm.
In 1799, they created what is known as the CMS, the Church Missionary Society, in 1799.
Mm-hmm.
In 1809, 10 years later, they created what is known as the CMJ, Church Missionary Judaica. Okay? Now, the sole purpose of the creation of the Church Missionary Society was had a plan, a policy to send missionaries into Africa
mm-hmm.
to bring Christianity into Africa and also bring Messianic Judaism into Africa. Now, this is in the 19th century. Now, a long story short, the first missionary group came out of the Church of England was in 1829 when they came into Ethiopia to try to bring and evangelize and bring Christianity into Ethiopia. And this is for the very first time. Now, what I'm telling you now, I haven't heard anyone else, no other scholars, is even mentioning this. You see? So in 1829, Samuel Gobat from the Church of England with a group of missionaries came into Ethiopia for the very first time to try to bring Christianity in there. And also the Jesuits from the Roman Catholic Church had a group over there too, trying to do the same thing. But here's the problem. They had to learn the language and the customs of the Ethiopians. So it wasn't just that easy to go in and start talking about Jesus Christ. Because those people had already their ethnicity already in place, their culture already in place. And here you are coming in as a foreigner with some type of religion Let me explain this to you. When when the ecumenical councils were being conducted throughout Turkey, and I have in my book, The Historical Origin of Christianity, I walk you through five ecumenical council meetings. In the Historical Origin of Islam book, I walk you through the last four of those council meetings. Christianity was not practiced in Africa, only in the double walled city of Constantinople, only in the Church of the Hagia Sophia, which is the world's first Christian church, built in 532, finished in 537, by African architects and African scholars, etc., etc. So outside of that double walled city, no place in Africa was Christianity practiced. If Christianity was practiced in Ethiopia, then why would they send, why would the Church of England send missionaries in there to bring and introduce Christianity to the Ethiopians if they already had Christianity? No, they didn't. You see? So here you have these missionaries coming in. They had to learn the languages and the different dialects. When I say languages, with an S, because different groups had different dialects they spoke over there in Ethiopia. And they had to learn the customs of the people, et cetera, et cetera. So when the Church of England sent Samuel Gobat over there in 1829, that was in opposition there, because they had to go through all the learning process of what these people were about, so far as language, customs, and ceremonies, and so forth and so on, with whatever they practiced over there. But they didn't practice they didn't have no Christianity over there. So they're bringing Christianity over there. Long story short, a man by the name of Lyle Gasser, G-A-L-I-J-G-A-S-S-A, Gasser, in 1855, they made him the emperor of Ethiopia. This is long story short. And his name, so they gave him an English name, Theodore II. You can look, all this, you can, anything I'm telling you, you can look it up by way of reference and dictionaries and encyclopedias, etc. Now, when they made him emperor in 1855 under the name of Theodore II, but prior to that, 12 years prior to that, in 1838, two doctors coming out of England came over there. Dr. C.W. Eisenberg, and Dr. L.C. Kraft, K-R-A-F-P, Kraft. What Dr. Eisenberg did, he learned the language of the Ethiopians there. And he went, after staying 2 years learning their language, he went back to England and created an Amharic dictionary of the Ethiopian language, with each word with an English part of the English language put next to each of those words that was done in Ethiopia. In Ethiopian. Okay? So now, in 1855, Samuel Gobat, who was then a bishop now, is introducing to the Ethiopians for the very first time Christianity. Okay? And Dr. L.C. Kraft brought one of his students over there at that time in 1855. His student that he brought over there was Martin Flagg. Martin Flagg, F-L-A-D. What he did, after he introduced Martin Flagg over there to the Ethiopians. They're being set up for Christianity to come in there now. What he did was to stay over there for 3 years, and then he went back to England, and he came back after 3 years in 1858, and he bought 31 donkeys loaded with the Amharic Bibles to be given out among the Ethiopians over there. You see? So therefore, they were setting up Christianity, the coming of Christianity. They began to teach these people. But before all this time, from 1829 to 1855, guess what they were doing? They were teaching the Ethiopians to speak English so they can understand what was being put upon them by way of Christianity from these missionaries. And I will say this, if you go anywhere in Africa, in any country in Africa, if they're speaking English in that country, Christianity is in that country also. All right, now, we headed up to where the Flossians come in. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, they began to teach the people after Samuel Gobat asked Theodore to the emperor of Ethiopia for permission to bring Christianity in there, and he gave him the permission to do that. This is the Ethiopian giving this white man permission to do that. Now, this is in 1855, 1858, they began to really evangelize and bring Christianity, teaching these Ethiopians after they taught them to speak English, how to read this Bible and introduce them to this dead white man on the cross and so forth and so on. Now, 2 years later, the same Church of England under the CMJ, Church Missionary Judaica, they sent a man by the name of Henry Aaron Stern in 1860. He went to the Flossians. The Flossians never, their name was Gayla, G-A-Y-L-A. They didn't like the name Flossians, Flossia given to them. They used their own native indigenous name of Gayla. So today, the Gayla tribe is known as the Flossians. So in 1860, the AIU, I'm sorry, the Church Missionary Society sent Henry Aaron Stern to teach the Gayla tribe that is known today as the Falasha, a form of Messianic Judaism. Okay? And he taught them out of the Bible. Because when George H. Bush was the president, I mean the vice president under Reagan, they airlifted a group of Falashas out of Ethiopia into the illegal state of Israel, and those Orthodox supposed Jews over there refused to accept them because they were taught out of the Bible and not out of the Torah. So therefore, they wasn't Orthodox enough. But anyway, 1860, Henry Aaron Stern was sent over there by the Church of England, Church Missionary Judaica, to teach them a form of Messianic Judaism out of the Bible. Okay? And this is what was happening. Now, 7 years later, in 1867, the AIU, the Alliance Israelite Universal of Paris, France, sent another man over there by the name of Joseph Halidi to teach them and set up and to teach them a form of Judaism also in 1867. So let me stop there because it would take up a whole lot of time. I have to give a lecture on that setting, then I could have the time to do that. But I gave you a little overview on how the Flossians came about, how Christianity came into Ethiopia.
All right, let me make another quick statement. All them years that I had been studying, this was something that I just couldn't grasp. And then when I read your book, I read the historical origins of Islam, and it went into the whole history of Judaism. They would always tell me that in 17 AD, the Romans under Titus, I believe was the year, came in and conquered Jerusalem, and then it pushed a million of Hebrew Israelites out of Africa. Out of Israel. They migrated from Israel all the way up to the west coast of Africa, up into Spain, and conquered Spain.
But, that's not true.
I know that's not true. I know that's not true now. I mean, because they can never prove it. That was just something that they would always say, like they kicked them out under Titus, and then that was a major migration all the way across Africa up into Spain.
No, brother Bay, let me explain it to you. That's called 70 AD. That's tradition. They said Vespasian and Titus. Vespasian was the Roman he was the Roman agent for the Roman government, and that these Jews in 70 AD had caused a problem for the Roman government, and they were warned. This is how the story goes. They were warned that if they don't change their way, then they will be destroyed. So they didn't change their way. So in 70 AD, that's tradition. All the Jews used that 70 AD thing. And Vespasian and his son, Titus, supposed to have went over there along with Josephus. Now, this is where they bring in Josephus. Now, they said that Titus and Vespasian had defeated the Jewish army.
Mm-hmm.
And Josephus was one of the generals in there. And they reduced, by defeating this army, they reduced Josephus down to just a secretary.
Mm-hmm.
And there's never been no Josephus. But anyway, here's what they're setting you up for when they say tell you that story. They said that Vespasian and Titus went in there and destroyed Jerusalem all the way down and left a wall there.
Mm-hmm.
That wall was to remind Jews what they have done against the Roman government. And today, that wall, this is over in Judaica, over in Jerusalem, you see? And so today, the Wailing Wall is used in, is one of the shrines over there in Jerusalem.
Mm-hmm.
That's what that's for. They're setting you up for that. Don't go for that.
Okay, so the temple never was ever built then, huh?
No. There's never been no Jews walking the earth in human form. The only place you find Jews is in between the pages of biblical literature and a narrative story. Like I'm telling the reader when I finish my book, The Historical Origin of Judaism, that Judaism is a paper religion. That's what it is. It's narrative stories written in literary form, put into the Bible for people to believe, because the Bible is the book that one has to believe in. If you don't believe in the Bible is worthless. Now, you heard of the story of Nebuchadnezzar.
Mm-hmm.
It says Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon. Babylon is in the Bible only.
Mm-hmm.
They said in 587, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, went into Judea, took the Jews out of Judea in 587, and took them to Babylon and put them into slavery.
Mm-hmm.
Then, in the same story, they said Cyrus II the Great, the Persian king, in 536, went into Babylon and freed the Jews and sent them back to Judea to build their second temple. This is all tradition. Okay? Mm-hmm. Now, if an individual believe that story about the Jews and Nebuchadnezzar and Babylon and Cyrus the Great, let's say, if you believe that story about Jews, guess what you have done? You have created a Jew in your thinking, in your belief, in your life.
Wow.
That's how you create Jews. Jews are created by one's belief.
And then they use fear tactics. Fear to make you really believe in the story, then they scare you, right?
Yes, because, see, if you believe in the story, if you, at one time, as a boy, I believed in Santa Claus. Maybe you did too. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But when I was coming up, my mother told me if I be a good boy, that Santa Claus, this big fat white man with reindeers and a sleigh full of toys, will come down the chimney and bring toys to me if I be a good boy. Okay? But now, I believed that story until one day I found the toys. You see? So I knew who Santa Claus was. My mother. See? So I didn't believe that no more. So it's the same thing. Whatever you believe. See, that's the reason why they tell you in all these religions, do you believe in the Lord Jesus Christ? Do you believe in the Bible? The Bible is a book that one has to believe in. If you don't believe in the Bible, it's worthless. Everything in the Bible becomes worthless. Because you put all your spiritual power that was given to you, going back to your own humanity. You give away all your spiritual power that was given to you when you came out of your mother's womb. You give it all away to these various religions and these objects and images and so forth and so on by way of belief. See?
All right, Brother Walters, we have some more callers here.
Okay.
Let's go to the lines. Thank you, brother.
All right.
We are area code 267. Area code 267, you're on the line.
Peace and blessings to both of you.
Yeah.
There's another interesting topic going on tonight.
Where are you calling from?
Calling from Philadelphia.
Okay.
Brother
right.
Gary calling from Philadelphia.
Okay.
About three questions to ask.
Take one at a time.
They one at a time.
Run together now. Take one at a time.
Okay. All right. One at a time.
What's your first
one? Language, what would be the language that the Egyptians were teaching the Greeks when they was coming to be educated in Kemet? And the second
No, I told you one at a time. Okay? The Greeks were conquerors. Okay? A conqueror don't learn the language of the conquered. They force their language on the conquered. You see? So when Alexander the Great came into Egypt, he forced the Greek language on our ancestors, the ancient Egyptians, which was the Greek language. And our ancestors being the only literate people on planet Earth, that means that they were the only people on Earth that could read or write because they created and invented an alphabet. And the alphabet can only be created one time. So after learning the Greek language, they applied that alphabet to the Greek language. So the day, as a misnomer, they said the Greek alphabet. So no, our ancestors did not teach the Greek any language because the Greek came into Egypt, had their own language, and they were the conquerors. What's your next question?
Okay. The second question would be the Dogons. We're speaking on the Dogons. If the Dogons were the Egyptians themselves, wouldn't they be speaking the Medinetra themselves?
You said speaking the Medinetra?
Yes, if they were.
How do you speak the
Medinetra? If they were the descendants of the Egyptians, wouldn't they still be speaking the Medinetra?
Not really.
Wouldn't they even be the Egyptians?
Wait, hold it. What do you? Let's define. What do you mean the Medinetra?
Well, they hired
as an alphabet or language.
The language.
Now, what?
I'm saying if they were the Egyptians themselves, wouldn't they be speaking the language?
Well, see, you have to go in and find out more about the Dogons. Whether you're dealing with mythology again, whether there was a Dogon, where are the Dogons today? Hello?
You can go ahead.
Hello?
You can go ahead. We're here.
Okay, I'm asking brother a question. Where are the Dogons today? Brother, are you there?
I don't know if he's still on. I think he's off. But
okay,
go ahead.
Go to the next question. I mean, whoever it is.
Area code 973. Area code 973. You on the air?
Ask him where they call.
Yes.
Calling from.
Good evening. My name is Rashad. I'm calling from East Orange.
Speak up a little louder, please.
Yes, my name is Rashad. I'm calling from East Orange, New Jersey.
Okay.
I need to ask you that question. When did you say Christianity appeared in Ethiopia?
And the Church of England began to come into Ethiopia in 1829, okay, the 19th century. That's in 1855, after learning the customs and the language of the Ethiopians. Then they began to really bring forth and teach Christianity to the Ethiopians.
Let me ask you, was there a form of Christianity in Ethiopia before that?
No, sir. No place in Africa was Christianity practiced other than the double-walled city of Constantinople, where the world's first Christian church was built in 532, finished in 537, built by African scholars and African architects. That was the only place that Christianity was practiced. Outside of the double-walled city, throughout Africa, no religion.
During Queen Mercator's time.
What?
Queen Mercator of Sheba, during her time. Well, there was
Sheba
a person named Ezana. Great.
No, here. Sheba is mythology. Sheba is connected with Solomon. Solomon never walked the earth as a human being. Sheba never walked the earth as a human being.
Okay. Well, let me
so don't
ask you
fall
this.
For the Sheba show. They set you up with that. That's a story that they set you up with to get you to accept what they're telling you.
Okay. Let me ask you this. Mm-hmm. During Prophet Muhammad's time, when some of the his followers were being chased by the Arabs, the enemies, and he told them to go to Ethiopia. There's a Christian king there that you could see.
Now, what time
and
is what
he
would
give you protection? Well, Prophet
what time
Muhammad
are you talking
was,
about the Prophet Muhammad? Who's speaking now?
That's going 1,400 some years ago.
This who's this brother from New Jersey?
Yes, that's brother from New Jersey, brother.
Okay,
okay.
I continue?
Go ahead.
So he told his followers, those who were being chased, to go to Ethiopia because there's a Christian king there who's friendly and he would give you protection. And they went there and they were given protection. The Arabs came and wanted them back. So, you know, they asked the followers of Muhammad what their belief was and what Jesus was to them, you know, what their understanding of Christ or whatever. So he gave them protection and kept the Arabs from taking them back. Now, he said it was a Christian king in Ethiopia.
Okay, now who's speaking now? This is Brother Bay or the brother from New Jersey?
Brother from New Jersey.
This me.
Brother from New Jersey, that's historically incorrect. There's never been no Muhammad walking the earth as a human being. Now,
don't even come with that, brother.
Okay, I got you.
Now, how do you get that?
Well, have you read my book?
How do you say that Muhammad never walked the earth?
Just a moment. Have you read my book, The Historical Origin of Christianity?
I never even read it.
I'm sorry. Have you read my book, The Historical Origin of Islam?
No, I didn't.
Okay, well, I suggest that you find... Just a moment. I suggest that you find that book, read the book, and then when I'm on the air again, you call up, and then we can go from there. But right now, you are a believer, and I don't deal with believers.
No,
I don't deal with
no
believers.
I'm going to ask you this.
Yes.
What proof do you have that he never existed?
Go and read my book.
No.
That's the question. I'm asking your question.
I don't want to read your book.
Why should I sit here... Because we're going to get into an argument. I don't have time to argue with you. See, you read my book. And then once you find out, and the information I put in the book, if you find something wrong with it, then when I'm on the air again, get on the phone and call me. And call me out on it.
I agree.
Right now, you are a believer. I don't deal or talk with believers. You need to find you another Islam alaikum, alaikum salam Muslim, and you all can talk your Muslim talk. What you're telling me is historically incorrect.
Professor Williams?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Let's move on to the next caller because we're not going to turn this into a debate.
Right.
Like you said, after he goes and read the books, come back and let's see what the conversation can be like because even the brother who was just on the last call, he said that he read your book, Historical Origin of Christianity, and he was a Hebrew Israelite at one time.
Mm-hmm.
How it changed his whole perspective. So,
right.
So that's the key to your writings, is for they to change the perspective, you know, of the readers from out of the role of religion into spirituality. So this becomes definitely necessary. So we're going to go to the next caller, 25.
Okay.
Caller 256, you on the line.
Where are you calling from?
56. Okay, let's go to 419. Area code 419, you on the line.
Model Tap, Brother Peace.
My Yahoo Tap.
Yahoo Tap.
Hey, it's Brother Ed in Ohio, man. What's up, Doc? What's up,
Brother? Brother Ed. How you doing, Ed?
You know how they do it, man, and that believe in stuff until they do the research. You know, they're still kind of lost, and then they have to defend what they believe in. But my
right.
question is, in the relationship to the brother Darius, now, he was an African that, I don't know if I'm right, correct or not, but I need you to explain the relationship to him and, like, the Council of Constantinople and the Nicene Council and all those other things. Was he one of the ancient Egyptians that went to him and told him that they were teaching falsely? Darius, is that his correct name? Because he was actually a historical figure, correct?
Where is this at? I mean, I'm trying to pinpoint you saying Darius. Darius, there's a Darius in the Persian myth.
Is it a myth? Because they said he was one of so-called. And then people are teaching this and saying that he was one of the brothers that went at the time after they had formed Serapis and all those other things, and they were worshiping a created false god. Was his name Arius or Darius?
You talking about Arian?
Arius. Are you talking about Arius?
Right, Arius.
Arius. Yeah. See, Darius is connected with the Persians. You see,
okay.
Now Arius was a Coptic Egyptian that was one of the reasons why the Nicene Council came about in 325. You see, in my book, Historical Origin of Christianity, I list and tell the reader three things, historical events that brought about the cause of the Council of Nicaea to come about in 325. And the first one was the Donatus Schismatic Controversy, and the donation of Constantine, and the strong statement by Arius. Arius said that Serapis, known today as Jesus the Christ, was a created creature, a perfect creature, but a creature nevertheless. And those three things, the Donatus Schismatic Controversy, the donation of Constantine, and the strong statement by Arius, brought about the Council of Nicaea 1 in 325. Is that what you're talking about?
Exactly. So he was actually a historical figure telling them that this thing that they created in this Bible, and that the creation of Serapis, and which was the creation of Christ. So he was actually a historical figure.
Yeah, he was a historical figure. He he was one of the three things of the historical events that I list in my book, The Historical Origin of Christianity, and what caused the Council of Nicaea 1 to come out in 325. Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And so what is the deal with the Apocrypha? So why were those books taken out? I'm not understanding the relationship to the Bible and the Apocrypha, and only that the Catholic Church reads those. I don't know if a lot of brothers ever saw it. And,
well...
Go ahead.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Because it is a crazy relationship with all this, because remember you did a lecture on who is this man called God?
Right.
So I'm kind of like, I hear all these brothers that are teaching consciousness, but they refer to the Almighty, the unseen, as God. So why are our scholars using God? I mean... I'm kind of confused.
Well,
so,
this is what they were taught at the beginning of their research, okay? And they came up with this as children. When I came out here on the scene 37 years ago, and I'm saying that there's no Jesus Christ ever walked this earth in human form, of any race, people, color, by the name of Jesus Christ, I thought that I was going to be heralded as a hero for bringing that information. But I found out, instead of me being a hero, these same scholars in the African community, I found out they were Christians, and I was stepping on their toes.
Okay.
They were some of them were Muslims, and I was stepping on their toes. And I said, there's no Prophet Muhammad. You see? So this God concept, like you said, I gave a lecture in L.A. on who is this man called God. So an individual really have to know about God, and I break it down in that lecture. And it's a little too long for me to break it down tonight over the phone, but that's the reason why that these scholars out here, not only the African scholars, the European scholars, every European scholar out there has embraced a religion of some kind. You see? Other than that, they would not be attached to Western academic colleges and universities. When I came out here, I found that the Chancellor Williams, who wrote The Destruction of Black Civilization, was a Roman Catholic Christian. I found out that George G.M. James was a Christian. I found out that Asa Hilliard, my good friend Asa Hilliard, was a Christian. I didn't know that until he died. And his eulogy was preached by Jeremiah Wright. He was a member of the church right here in Chicago, Jeremiah Wright's church. Reverend Wright is retired now, but he preached Asa's eulogy, his funeral, because Asa died in Egypt when both of them were over there at the same time. And I got the eulogy. I got, because every month they put out a book called The Trumpet. And when Asa died, and they put out this magazine called The Trumpet with two covers on it. One cover, they had a great big full-length picture of Asa Hilliard. On the other cover, they had a picture of Farrakhan. And I read what Jeremiah Wright had preached for the eulogy of Asa Hilliard. And he, long story short, he said that in his eulogy, he said he came in on one of Asa's lectures, and he thought that he heard Asa say that he wasn't a Christian. And he asked Asa, said, Asa, did I hear you right? Are you you said you wasn't a Christian. He said, no, I am a Christian. It's in, I got it written in the trumpet. In fact, I got three copies of the trumpet at that time. So I got it right here. Anyway, I found out they were Christian. Diop's a Muslim, you see? And it goes on and on and on. So I was stepping on toes out here. I didn't know that. I thought, hey, to find out this information, be great. ASCAC, those members of ASCAC sitting up there, they're Christians. You know, I found different members of ASCAC sitting up there, Christians. These guys up in the high echelon of ASCAC. People, and they're allowed, in fact, Nzinga, who just died last year or year before, she, I heard her say, at one of the ASCAC conference, that she, as a child, Christianity was pounded into her. And she says, right today, I'm still a Christian. I heard it said out of her mouth. You see, so there you have it.
All right, brother. Hey, man, y'all keep it up, man. It's great to hear you.
Okay, same here, brother Ed, and hope to see you one day.
All right, then. Model tap.
Model tap.
Peace, Brother Ed, my hotel. All right, we got another caller here. It's 347, area code 347. You are on the line. This is New York. Peace.
Good night, Dr. Alan Bay. Good night to your guests, and thanks for all the information. Want to do a promo?
Okay, be ready.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Looking for something to do this weekend? Well, wait no more. Saturday, April 28th, it's the grand opening of Venti Lounge, in Long Island. The address is 102 Rockaway Avenue, Valley Stream, New York, 11580. It's a place that has the perfect blend of atmosphere, cocktails, and entertainment. Book a table and receive a complimentary bottle of champagne. Everyone will receive a free Venti Lounge shot every hour of the night. There will be a live DJ all night long, plus much more, only at Venti Lounge. Visit them on their website at www.ventilounge.com or like them on Facebook at Facebook Venti Lounge. And to book a table, please contact Johnny at 718-751-6235. Again, that number is 718-751-6235. Thank you, Dr. Bay, and have a great night.
All right, you too, Sister Deborah. Peace. All right, we got area code. Let me see. Peace. You're on the line. I don't know the area code here, but it's coming out 111. Peace. Are you on the air?
I said to Washington East. How you doing, Dr. Lee?
Hey, Washington East, brother. How you doing tonight?
I'm doing fine. This is Noble Pie.
All right.
Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Washington proper, also known as Louisiana.
Okay.
Yes, I'm listening to the show. It's wonderful. It's wonderful. But when the elder was saying about how there was no Mohammed, well, I know he ruffled a lot of feathers out of all the Islamic sects, you know, because actually I was basically looking at a grooming of a nation where they have a copy of the Moorish Holy Circle 7 Quran, right? And in the back of it, it was saying about how it was saying that to consecrate the missionaries of the prophet to establish the faith of Muhammad in America, you know, and for the elder to say there was no Prophet Muhammad, or El-Amin Prophet Muhammad, didn't exist. Whoa, that like crushed every, you know, fiber of a person that is a believer instead of a knower. You know?
That's the problem. That's the problem, a believer. See, you cannot believe in something that you know nothing about. Any subject that you need, that you want to find out and learn about that subject, you go and find the origin of it. And then you build a foundation by learning the origin of whatever subject that you endeavor to find out information about, okay? So once you find out the information, then you have control of that subject. Then that takes you out of the believer. It's been a believer. Mm-hmm. Believing is very, very dangerous. It leaves you wide open. Anybody can come up and tell you anything. A believer, when a person tells me that, oh, I'm a Muslim, that person's telling me they know nothing about their own personal humanity, the same thing that I talked about when we opened up this show. Know nothing about it. If you knew anything about your humanity, you wouldn't be going out talking about Islam Alaikum and Alaikum Salam. You know nothing about that. And then they want to get on and hear me saying, no Prophet Muhammad, go and read my book and it'll tell you why I'm saying that. You see, if you want to argue with me, I don't argue with you. I'm not going to argue with you. You go and find another Muslim. You all argue together. I'm the wrong person.
Well, thank goodness I'm not a religious person, but an indigenous spiritual person, you know, because Dr. Aleem and I, we were basically speaking about one of the terms, right? And, you know, one of the brothers say it was oxymoron, but I say it was more of a redundant than to say oxymoron of the term that was being used, you know. And just like you said, we'll find out in the truth shell and we'll prevail, you know. And with that, I say thank you and Shabbanish.
Okay,
you're
thank
right.
you.
Noble Paul, we appreciate you calling in. All right, we're going to go to area code 919. That's down here in my area in North Carolina, Brother Walters.
Okay.
Here we go. Peace.
Peace. How are y'all doing tonight?
Doing good.
Fine as usual, and you?
I'm good. I just wanted to say thank you for all of your research and your work. You've been on the front lines, and telling the truth is, from my perspective, not always easy when so many arrows are being thrown at you, but it gets easier. I wasn't able to hear the first part of the show, but I wanted to ask if you had any guidance for us listeners as to where we should be putting our energy into spirituality once we break from fairy tales of religion.
Well, the first thing you should, I'm sorry that you missed the first part of the show. To answer your question, is that you have to know and learn about your own personal humanity, because you already have it.
Right.
Okay, where you should put your spirituality. You already walking around with it 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. It's inside of you. Learn about that. Okay? Learn about your pineal gland. Learn about your subconscious mind. Learn about your own universe. You know, the function of it. Learn about who you are. See, this is all part of your learning. The first thing an individual human being needs to learn is something about their own personal humanity. Know that when you came out of your mother's womb, that you were given life. When they cut that umbilical cord to separate you from your mother, you had life flowing through your body, but you never had a religion. Man gave you the religion. All religions are man-made, okay? All religions are man-made, pagan, heathen, occult religions based on mythology. That's all religions are, you see? So if man can get you to believe in one of these religions, what man has done is taken you away from knowing your personal humanity. In other words, it's keeping you in ignorance of who you are as a human being. And once you know who you are as a human being, nobody can come along and give you a religion. See, religion is passed down to the innocent child. When you came out of your mother's womb, you were an innocent child. You knew nothing about anything because you were beginning to develop. But your parents or the person that raised you introduced you to a disease and a virus called religion. That's all religions are. A disease and a virus passed from one generation to the next generation in that human being's innocence as a child. And you and your innocence, when your mother and father introduced you to this junk called religion, you couldn't say, Mom, Dad, I don't want to be a Christian. I don't want to be a Muslim. I don't want to be a Black Hebrew Israelite. I don't want to be a Jew. I don't want to be a Buddhist. I don't want to be a Hindu, so forth and so on. You couldn't say that because you was a child, you see? So here you grew up as an adult, raised in the church, and then you have children, and you pass that disease on to your children for the next coming generation. See, your parents gave the disease to you and virus to you as a child in your innocence. Your grandparents gave it to your parents. Your great grandparents gave it to your great grandparents, and your great great grandparents gave it to your great grandparents. So it goes all the way back to here you are today in the year 212, with a cross around your neck, worshiping a dead white man in the church, giving away all your spiritual power, whereby you become powerless, you see? And when you go to a mosque, Islam or Lake, it's the same thing. You're giving away all of your power over to an object that never walked the earth in human form. Nothing, you see? And yes. Muslims, they get mad when I say it's no Prophet Muhammad. Never existed. See? You guys, they don't. I'm gonna tell you something else, Brother Bay and caller. These Muslims don't realize there are two Islams. They don't understand. If they'll debate me, you want to debate on which Islam, one or two? They don't know what I'm talking about because they are believers. Believers, I found out, this is Muslims. These African Muslims, they do not read. They don't study, and they're followers.
Right.
They sit up, oh, yeah, brother, I bear witness to that. Yeah, go on, brother man. And all that little foolishness sitting up there, don't even know what they're talking about. And when I come along and say, no problem, Mom, they want to get, oh, wait, brother, and get all indignant and arrogant. You know? So, anyway, that'd be my answer to you, sister.
Thank you very much, and I appreciate it.
Okay, right. Sir. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, thank
all right.
You. Peace. All right, area code 804. Area code 804, you're on the air.
Peace, peace. Hey, brother, I'm Aime, and peace to Dr. Williams.
Yes, sir.
Dr.
Peace
Williams.
To you.
Was there any pre-Hebrew Israelite prior to Rashid? And can you talk about this state of Israel? Was there any, you know, the great Masada? Was there any great Masada? Because I listened to the Hebrew doctrine, right? And they said they was in Israel and the Romans and the you know, Hebrew walk. Was there any such thing?
No. See, this is what's wrong in our African community today. Religion has destroyed us as a people. Please, please, Africans in the African community, run away from religion. Take all the religious literature, any kind, and burn it. And get it out of your life. You don't need that. Find your way back to ancient Egypt, where your greatness is lying unclaimed in the continent of Africa. Now, in order to have a Hebrew, you have to have an Abraham. Is that true? Is that true?
Yes.
Yes.
Without an Abraham, you cannot have a Hebrew.
You can't have Hebrew, Christianity, Islam, or Judaism.
Because Abraham is the key to all three major Western religions, Christianity, Islam, and Judaism. Okay?
And another.
If you, I'm going to put a challenge out to you. If you got a pencil? Hello, caller.
Yeah.
You have a pencil? Huh?
I thought I had one on hang. Yeah, I got one now. I got one.
You got a piece of paper?
Yeah, I got one on hang now. I'm
okay.
Ready.
I want you to buy a book called The Original Torah.
Oh, by Rashi?
No. Put this down.
The Original Torah. Okay.
The Original Torah by S, the initial S. David. Sperling, S-P-E-R-L-I-N-G. S-P-E-R-L-I-N-G. You got that?
You said Sterling. Sterling.
Huh? Spur, S-P.
Spur, okay. I get
S-P-E-R.
Right.
L-I-N-G. S. David Sperling. You got that?
Yes, S-P-E-R-I-N.
Please, listen. S, you got the S down?
Right.
P, got that down?
Right.
E, got that down?
Avra.
L, I.
Okay. I got you.
L-I-N-G. Spell it for me. Pronounce what I'm.
S-P-E-L-I-N-G.
S-P-E-R-A.
I got it.
No, you don't. You keep telling me you got me, then you come back.
S-P-E-R-L-I-N-G.
And what's the first two letters? What's the S?
David Sperling.
S. David Sperling. You got that?
Right.
He wrote what book? What book did he write?
The Original Torah.
And you go and find that book. S. David Sperling wrote that book in the year 2000. And he is a rabbi who teaches at the Hebrew Union College in New York City. And he in his book, The Original Torah, he is saying this. Listen to this. He says, there is no Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Moses, Sarah, Gideon, Esau, or Joshua. Okay? That every name character in the Bible, I'm saying this, never walked to earth as human beings. Now, he's telling you there's no Abraham. So all the little black Hebrew Israelites out there, some of the black Hebrew Israelites, the Jews have telling you the truth because they told you a lie and you believed it and you set up your life based on the lie. So now they're telling you the truth. You see? And there was no Abraham. So don't bring no kind of Hebrew, nothing.
Right, right.
Okay.
And Dr. Wynn, one more question now. Now, if Jesus never existed, how could we have the Olivet prophecies and the prophecies of Revelation? That's a dangerous thing. It seems like man trying to orchestrate reality to coincide with this prophecy. That's dangerous.
Okay, now see, you have answered your own question. Man wrote all of this. Okay? Man wrote all of this. I can prophesy that you're going to have storms and hurricanes. Okay? I can prophesy that before the year is out. And what will happen, do you think? Are we going to have any more hurricanes and storms?
You're still going to have them.
You're still going to have them. But I can put that in the book and put it out there for you to believe in the Bible and tell you that this is the word of God. When God is only a man, God is a man. It has nothing to do with creation. Okay? So get this Bible, all that junk out of your system. Go somewhere and get you a spiritual enema, like a colonic.
Or a blood transfusion. Or a blood transfusion.
Now, you don't need a blood transfusion. You need to immunize your mind. Get you an enema and clean out your mind, all this junk and garbage, this religious garbage and books and this Hebrew this and all you got it going here. Please.
But you know, Dr. Will, humanity, those people that's in that book, they scare me because, you know, they prophecy.
You know why they scare you, brother? You know why they scare you? Let me tell you why.
They don't really scare me.
I'm going to use your own word. You know why they scare you? Because you believe that stuff. Stop believing that stuff.
I learned from you. I know better now.
You believe
better.
In Santa Claus?
No.
Okay.
No.
You used to believe when you was a boy, didn't you?
You know, I didn't mean to use that word scared. It just frustrates me how they try to orchestrate.
But then stay away from it. If something is bad for you and makes you feel bad, stay away from it.
Yeah.
It's not a mythology. That stuff is not real.
Yeah. True.
Okay. Yep. And the illegal state of Israel has made and claimed land over there off of this Bible because the rest of the world has been fooled by the stories that is written in the Bible to believe that there are Jews walking the earth. No. It's a myth.
What year did they occupy Israel other than 1948, you know? Was they there in the 11th century, 10th century?
No. You see, they started coming there in the 19th century.
Oh, man.
You see?
You have to, it's a
history to this, it's a human history. And this is what you need to know. Human history, damn all that mythical stuff
right
out there. Okay?
I just want you to know before I leave, you did so much, man. You did so much for me with this. I mean, you just did so much for me. I can see better now.
Okay, great. I'm glad of that, brother. Thank you.
Oh, yeah. As a matter of fact, Professor Williams, he's the one in which that actually requested you to be on the air.
Okay.
And I also been in Luxor. I was over there 8 months. And I had another revelation, you know.
Oh.
I'm like, forget Israel. Everything belongs to me is in Luxor. You know, you can't see nothing in Israel. You can't even find monkey bones there. But everything you can see in Luxor.
That's our ancestral homeland, Luxor, Egypt. That's part. As long as you're in Egypt, then you claim ancient Egypt. Do not call yourself an Egyptian, because white folks can say, and they over there now, those white Arabs, they are Egyptians. But we are descendants of the ancient Egyptians. In order to be an ancient Egyptian, you have to be African. You see that?
And you know another thing, Dr. Will, I went into the Winter Palace. You know about the Winter Palace across from the Nile, right?
Okay, go ahead.
And I went up in there. I was in there about 30, 35 minutes before one of them white Egyptians rain up on me from personnel management, rain up on me. And the first two words came out his mouth like, who let me in here and how did I get in here?
Okay.
Yeah.
That's
so
something. He in your ancestors' homeland, and these Arabs, these destructive Arabs are questioning you as to why are you here. That's horrible.
Yeah. How did I get in the Winter Palace? Because it's like a 4-5-star hotel.
Right.
So I'm thinking, I'm in America, you know, you can go anywhere you want. So evidently, they don't let them black people, because, see, the black people that look like us live on the other side of the Nile, back there where Harbor City and, you know, the valley. You know,
the
everything
Nubians.
Over there on the side.
The Nubians.
Yes. They don't let them people in the establishment. And I had to find that out by accident myself.
Okay, you, brother, are a descendant of the ancient Egyptians. That's what you claim, and that's who you are. Do not call yourself an Egyptian. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
You call yourself a descendant of the ancient Egyptian. In order for you to be an ancient Egyptian, you have to be African. Anybody of any race, creed, or color can be an Egyptian. A Chinese can be an Egyptian. An Indian of India can be an Egyptian. A Mexican can be an Egyptian. A European can be an Egyptian. All you got to do is stay over there or be born over there, and you become an Egyptian. Okay? But you cannot call, they cannot call themselves descendants of the ancient Egyptians. The ancient Egyptians, those Africans over in the continent of Africa, built the Great Pyramid, the Sphinx, and brought forth all the civilization for all of humanity. That's where we come in. We are the descendants of those people, and they are known in history as the ancient Egyptians. Okay? And stop using the word Kemet. It's very detrimental to us. You cannot find your way back to ancient Egypt using that word, but that goes into another lecture. Thanks so much for your call.
Exactly. Thank you. And Brother Aleem. Peace.
All right. Peace, Brother.
All right. Peace now.
Yeah.
All right, Brother Professor Williams. That is the end of the questions. Is there anything you want to say before as you're closing, how they can get your books or up and coming events, or I know that we spoke about that you just finished doing like a eulogy portion to Brother Steve Coakley's funeral.
Right.
Can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, I was in LA over this past weekend. You know, Steve Coakley died, I think, about Monday of last week, I believe.
Right.
And my wife and I, we went into L.A., and I was at the Maricar Ra. Are you familiar with Maricar Ra, the Crest Unity Spiritual Center there in Los Angeles?
No, I'm not.
Okay. Well, I give lectures there every time I come to L.A. and over to the FEVA Center in L.A., so forth and so on. But anyway, last Friday, they had a memorial service for Brother Steve Coakley. Steve Coakley is out of Chicago, and I used to run into Steve, and we used to talk and so forth and so on. And he was a very brilliant brother. You know, he's a very brilliant, he was a genius and a hell of a researcher.
Right.
And he worked for Harold Washington. He worked in his administration, the Harold Washington administration, to the Jews.
Right.
Caused him to be dismissed out of that because of some prior lecture that he had done talking about the Jews. And so they, had Harold Washington to put pressure on him, and he resigned, and he made his way into L.A. So he died there. He was a young man. He was 59 years old. So I was one of the speakers there. I was on the program. My name was on the program, and I was one of the speakers, and I gave my condolences to his family. His family was there and so forth and so on. And I contributed, and talked about what I knew about Steve and so forth and so on. So it was a beautiful tribute. beautiful memorial. The place was packed, standing room only. So I really, you know, enjoyed being around the brothers and the sisters. I love my people, my African people, so I love to be around you people, you guys, you know, us people. I won't say you people, that sounds so European. But anyway, I love being around my people, my African people.
That's right.
My Afrocentric, minded, conscious people, so forth and so on. So anyway, that's where I was this past. And then April, the first part of this month, I was in Easter weekend, I was in Detroit. I gave a lecture in Detroit the Friday night, and then the next day, my wife and I, we gave an all-day workshop, a learning workshop. And I disseminated lots of information there, you know. And then I'm to go back there in October. I'm invited back there again in October in Detroit. And while in L.A., I was at the Black Writers on Tour, Dr. Rosie Milliken affair. And I gave I was on the program. I gave a lecture there at the center that she had it there in Carson, Community Center in Carson, California. And I gave a lecture there this past Sunday. I mean, Saturday, I'm sorry. So anyway, I'm going to be in New York, up in the Brooklyn area. They're getting the dates for me to come in into Brooklyn. So anyway, it's a learning experience, and I'm trying to work on my book, my new book coming out within 45 or 60 days, Dispelling Myths of Ancient Egypt. And in that book, I'm putting in lots of information. It's loaded. It's pregnant. This book is pregnant with information that nobody's telling you this. So I'm
right.
Bringing it to our community, African community.
That's right.
So, anyway, I'm looking forward for that book to be out because a lot of people are waiting for it, and I have a lot of places to go once the book get out. And another thing, my Historical Origin of Christianity has been out for 19 years now. It's in its eighth printing, and it's selling all over America, in the Caribbean, and the U.K., and other parts of the English-speaking world.
Well, yeah, and I got mine when it first came out 19 years ago.
Oh, my goodness. You better, I better get you another one until you update.
I have another one, but that one was actually signed by you.
Oh, okay. Okay, great.
So I can't get rid of that one.
Can't get rid of it? Okay. Okay. And then my Historical Origin of Islam has been out for 9 years. It's in its fourth printing. That's selling all over, you know. So that's...
when I need to get... signed by you.
Huh?
So that's the one I need to get signed by you. I don't have one signed by you yet.
Okay, you got it?
Oh, yeah, I got that. I've been had that when that one first came out.
Okay, good. Okay, you grab them up. I don't blame you. Okay,
oh, yeah.
when I meet you and see you again, I'll sign it for you. No problem.
Okay, appreciate it.
You know, so I'm looking forward to coming out among my people with this new book. And, you know, that's all I have to say right through here.
All right. Are there any websites or anything in which that people can go to?
I don't have a website as yet. They can email me.
Okay.
They can email me at ancientegyptian@msn.com.
Okay.
Ancient, A-N-C. INT EGYPTIAN @msn.com. If you email me, put your phone number there and I'll get back to you.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll get back to you. If you email me and you put your phone number there, and I'll call you back. And we can go from there. And if a person wants me to come in and do lectures or anything like that, email me, ancientegyptian@msn.com. Put your phone number and name and phone number there, and I'll call you back, and we can go from that point.
All right, all right. Well, we definitely appreciate you being on tonight.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, we're going to definitely have you on again if that's possible, anytime you want to.
Well,
the floor is open for you because this information is necessary, you know, because as you heard from some of the discussions in which that was trying to turn into debates, people are still trapped in the realm of religion. And
right.
They need as many people as possible in order to help free their minds so they ask or follow. So, you know, that's what I got to say about that. Any other closing remarks?
No, I don't debate with people on religion.
Right.
You know, because I found out that a person who wants to debate me on religion is the person that is a believer.
Right.
Okay, you're talking belief, and I'm talking historical discipline of facts. Okay?
Right.
And
mm-hmm.
So, like, oil and water don't mix. So you're talking water, and I'm talking oil.
That's right.
So the two don't mix. So if you want to debate somebody, go and get another Christian or Muslim or Black Hebrew Israelite. Y'all can debate all night long. But
right.
I'm not going to debate with you.
That's right.
Especially if you haven't read my books. You haven't read my books, and what you going to debate me on? You don't even know what I'm talking about.
That's the truth.
You see?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I don't have time to waste my time and my life after I don't wasted. I've been out here for 37 years writing books, trying to write and bring information into our African community to try to get our people to wake up.
That's right.
And bring facts in there to them.
Right.
So if they want to still hold on to it, nothing I can do about that but bring the facts and the goals that I can help with the information I have to give, then it helps them, and I'm happy about that.
All right. Well, I know I'm happy about it. I appreciate you once again, and I'm going to definitely stay in contact with you, so please hold the door open for me so I can keep that constant communication because, I mean, you're one of our great scholars, and we need you. And,
okay.
That you're dropping is so phenomenal. I mean, and like you said, it's not being taught anywhere, so we definitely need it. You know,
right.
And for those who haven't gotten the books, which I don't know why as of yet, you need Historical Origin of Christianity. You need Historical Origin of Islam. You need both of those books, you know, in your library if you don't have them. It's necessary.
Right.
Essential. All right. So thank
That's
you,
correct.
Professor Williams, and we're going to talk with you later, and we're
okay.
going to end the show, and we just really appreciate you. Thank you.
And thank you so much, and you can anytime you need me to come on the radio, just give me a call.
I sure will.
Okay.
Peace and blessings.
Thanks so much, Brother Bay.
All right.
Mayas Hotep.
Mayas Hotep.
Boys and girls want to hear a true story. Saturday night was at this real wild party. They had the liquor overflowing the cup. About 5-6 strippers trying to work for a buck. And I took one girl outside with me. Her name was Lana. She was in junior high with me. I said, why you up in there dancing to cash? I said, the whole lot seems to have seen you last. She said,
what would you do if your son was at home? Crying all alone on the bedroom floor because he's hungry. And the only way to feed him is to sleep with a man for a little bit of money and a steady go. So we're smoking rock now, in and out of lockdown. I ain't got a job now. So for you, this is just a good sign. But for me, this is rock, all right.
Girl, you ain't the only one with a baby. That's no excuse to be living all crazy. Then she looked me right square in the eye. Every day I wake up hoping to die. Said, nigga, I know about pain, cause me and my sister ran away so my daddy couldn't rape us. Before I was a teenager, I'd have been through more shit you can't even relate to.
What would you do if your son was at home? Crying all alone on the bedroom floor, cause he's hungry. And the only way to feed him is to sleep with a man for a little bit of money and his daddy go.
Wait a second, man. Something just ain't sounding right.
No,
you trying to tell me your girlfriend couldn't just go out and get a regular job?
Man,
it's mad shorty's going through the same thing, yo. If I ever ran into your girlfriend, I'd probably say,
hold up.
What would you do? Get up on my feet and let go.